Hello, Sun Sounds listeners. This is Michael Shannon, your volunteer reader. I'm going to read the major news articles from the Monday, October 6, 2025 edition of Tucson, Arizona's Daily Star. Before we begin with the headline articles, let's find out what kind of weather is in store for us. Today, plenty of sunshine, highs to 93 degrees Fahrenheit, winds south at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tonight, a clear sky, lows to 63 degrees Fahrenheit, winds south at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow's forecast predicts mostly sunny skies, highs to 97 degrees Fahrenheit, winds south at 5 to 10 miles per hour. We'll begin with the reading of the first article on the Arizona Daily Stars front page titled, Health Centers Face Cuts. This article was written by Jasmine Demers of the Arizona Center for Investigative Reporting. When 35-year-old Jessica Rhodes walked into a residential treatment program in Phoenix 3 months ago, she had almost nothing left. She was broke, addicted to meth, and terrified of losing a 4-year-old daughter. I was in my rock bottom, she said. I was sitting in a room trying to get high, but I couldn't because my veins were all shot out. A week later, she checked herself into LifeWell, a residential treatment program run by Terrell's Health. With Medicaid covering her treatment, housing, and primary care, Rhodes is now sober, preparing to move into her own home and starting a new job. If it was not for this facility and these specific people working here, I could be dead, she said. Terrell's Health is one of the 24 federally qualified community health centers in Arizona that provide care to low-income patients. Together, they operate nearly 240 sites and serve about 870,000 patients, offering everything from prenatal care and vaccination to behavioral health services and chronic disease management. Arizona CHCs rely on Medicaid more than centers almost anywhere else in the country. Last year, 43% of their patients were covered through the Arizona Healthcare Cost Containment System, the state's Medicaid agency. Those visits bring in more than $700 million a year, about two-thirds of all patient revenue. Even with federal grants and other funding in the mix, Medicaid still pays for 54% of everything Arizona's clinics do, the fourth highest rate in the country as of 2023. When you take a state like Arizona, where about one in every five Medicaid enrollees in the state is actually served by a health center, it is a great example of how reliant health centers are on Medicaid funding, said Figale Jacobs, a national health policy expert and director of the Geiger Gibson Program in Community Health. The state's health centers don't just serve Medicaid patients, they depend on Medicaid patients to survive. Now the passage of the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, a sweeping federal tax and spending measure central to President Donald Trump's second-term agenda, threatens to upend the clinics at the core of Arizona's health safety net. The state could lose an estimated $34 billion in Medicaid funding over the next decade under the statute signed into law on July 4th. More than 300,000 of the state's most vulnerable patients may ultimately lose coverage after eligibility rules tighten and new work requirements take effect late next year. For community health centers, that could mean millions in lost revenue, enough to force some to reduce hours, lay off staff, cut services, or even close their doors. Though the losses would be felt nationwide or statewide, they're likely to hit rural communities the hardest. Roughly 40% of Arizona's health centers are located outside metropolitan areas where patients can face drives of 90 minutes or more to reach affordable care. The impact of closures and cutbacks in those regions could ripple far beyond community health centers, straining emergency departments, rural hospitals, and private practices statewide, according to Karen Hoffman Tepper, president and CEO of Terrell's Health. What we're really talking about is destabilizing the entire healthcare system, not just harming those individuals that currently are receiving Medicaid, Tepper said. Medicaid and community health centers have been linked from the start. Both were created in 1965 as part of President Lyndon Johnson's war on poverty and rooted in the civil rights movement, with CHCs designated to provide a national infrastructure for health equity and Medicaid attendant to cover care for low-income populations. More recently, Arizona's expansion of Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act added hundreds of thousands of patients to the program, fueling the growth of CHCs across the state. Policy experts warn the new federal law could reverse much of that progress. Starting in December 2026, the law will require states to conduct Medicaid eligibility checks twice a year and impose additional work requirements on adults who gained coverage under the Affordable Care Act. Supporters of the new rules argue the changes are necessary to rein in costs and reduce fraud. They say work requirements will encourage self-sufficiency and ensure taxpayer dollars are directed to those who need them most. But Dr. Daniel Dirksen, director of the University of Arizona's Center for Rural Health, said the paperwork alone could push thousands of qualified Arizonans off the rolls. Many are likely to lose coverage not because they're ineligible, but because they fail to update or renew their information on time, he said. Jacobs with the Geiger-Gibson Program in Community Health described the upcoming work requirements as partly onerous. To stay covered, many enrollees will need to prove they work at least 80 hours a month, a difficult hurdle for older adults, people in poor health, and those without steady jobs or places to live. Her concerns are backed by research. She and other analysts found that 5.6 million health centers patients who live in Medicaid expansion states like Arizona could lose coverage over the next 5 years, resulting in $32 billion in lost revenue. Even for those who manage to keep their coverage, access could shrink. The law will reduce the federal government share of the Medicaid funding in the coming years, forcing Arizona to either spend more state dollars or cut services. That could mean lower payments to providers, fewer covered services like dental or mental health care, and added financial pressure on clinics and hospitals. I think we're going to see staffing reductions. We're going to definitely see site closures and consolidations, and we may see health center closures, Jacobs said. In some states, we know that these things are already happening. Community health centers rely on a fragile mix of Medicaid, Medicare, commercial insurance, and sliding fee payments to operate. Even a 1% decrease in Medicaid coverage for center patients and a corresponding 1% spike in uncompensated care could mean a $1 million annual shortfall for clinics, said Lisa Neri, Chief Program Officer for the Arizona Alliance for Community Health Centers. The math worries patients like Rhodes, who depends on her Terrace Health Center for ongoing substance use treatment and primary care. The clinic has the highest percentage of Medicaid patients in any health center in the state. It's life and death for us, Rhodes said. Not only is it the treatment part, but the housing while we're here. It's the medication while we're here. Together, those supports help people in recovery get into the right mindset to be able to participate and be an active member of society, she said. If that's taken away, lives will be lost. Any drop in primary care access will lead to a decline in overall population health, according to Tepper, the Terrace Health CEO. When patients lose coverage or access to clinics, they often delay or skip preventative care, leading over time to higher costs, longer waits, and greater strain on the remaining clinics and emergency rooms. Rural regions are likely to feel those effects most acutely. In many communities, health centers serve as the front line of care for people who might otherwise go without, said Jessica Yanov, president and CEO of the Arizona Alliance for Community Health Centers. Some residents already travel up to 2 hours to see a doctor with access to certain specialized services like perinatal care, particularly limited. Health centers are more than clinics, they are lifelines, Yanov said. Losing them would mean losing vital access to care where it's needed most. Access to already scarce hospitals is also at risk in rural areas. 5 of Arizona's 17 federally designated critical access hospitals in Page, Winslow, Bisbee, Nogales, and Globe would close due to Medicaid cuts, a University of North Carolina study found. People will lose their coverage, but they will not lose their health care needs, said Mike Renault, CEO of Valley del Sol Community Health in Phoenix. They will continue to need services. The problem is there will be no reimbursement for that. How do you sustain that system? The answer is you can't. Most of the law's major changes won't take effect until after the 2026 election. How much they sting will largely depend on how Arizona chooses to implement them. The state will have far fewer dollars to run its Medicaid program, Tapper said, leaving leaders to choose between backfilling the gap with state funds or imposing cuts. AHCCCS is asking for more than $71 million in next year's state budget solely to fund the staff and system updates needed to comply with the new federal mandates. Governor Katie Hobbs, a Democrat, has said Arizona doesn't have the capacity to fully replace the federal dollars they would lose, and her budget priorities often clash with those of the Republican-controlled legislature, which will play a decisive role in how the state responds. Renault said state leaders and mental health providers alike will need to work together to soften the blow. It is a state problem. It is a managed care problem. It is a provider problem. It is a hospital problem. Frankly, it is an employer problem, he said. The whole entire community is going to have to come together to solve it. For health center leaders, the question is not whether the cuts will hit, but how deeply. That uncertainty makes it hard to plan ahead. In the meantime, organizations like Terrace Health and Valley de Sol are expanding their eligibility teams to help people enroll and stay enrolled in Medicaid. We're not going to stop caring for people because that's what we are here for, Renault said. We will be under significant stress financially if there's no solution to coverage for these folks. The stakes are especially personal for Jessica Rhodes, who is starting a new life with her daughter. Recovery is something she works at every day, she said, and the support of her community health center has been essential. She worries about what happens if that safety net frays. You have to chase your recovery the way you chase those drugs, she said. And without these people and these places that help us, there is no chance. The next front page article is titled, Trump Sends California Troops to Oregon. This article was written by the Associated Press, Dateline, Sacramento, California. President Donald Trump is sending California National Guard members to Oregon after a judge temporarily blocked his administration from deploying that state's guard to Portland, and Governor Gavin Newsom pledged Sunday to fight the move in court. At the direction of the president, approximately 200 federalized members of the California National Guard are being reassigned from duty in the greater Los Angeles area to Portland, Oregon, to support U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement and other federal personnel performing official duties, including the enforcement of federal law, and to protect federal property, Chief Pentagon spokesman Sean Parnell said on Sunday in an emailed statement. The move comes a day after Illinois governor made a similar announcement about troops in his state being activated. Oregon Governor Tina Kotek said that 101 California National Guard members arrived in her state Saturday night by plane, and more were on the way. Kotek said there was no formal communication with the federal government about the deployment. This action appears to be intentional to circumvent yesterday's ruling by a federal judge, Kotek said in a statement Sunday. There is no need for military intervention in Oregon. There is no insurrection in Portland. No threat to national security. Oregon is our home, not a military target. A spokesperson for Kotek said Sunday he could not verify the current location of the Guard members who arrived in Oregon on Saturday. Newsom, a Democrat, said in the statement that California personnel were on their way Sunday and called the deployment a breathtaking abuse of the law and power. He said these troops were federalized and put under the president's control months ago over his objection in response to unrest in Los Angeles. The commander-in-chief is using the U.S. military as a political weapon against American citizens, Newsom said. We will take this fight to court, but the public cannot stay silent in the face of such reckless and authoritarian conduct by the President of the United States. Newsom said earlier Sunday that about 300 Guard members were being sent from California. Messages were sent to his office seeking to clarify the discrepancy. A Trump-appointed federal judge in Oregon on Saturday temporarily blocked the Trump administration's plan to deploy the Oregon National Guard in Portland to protect federal property amid protests after Trump called the city's war-ravaged. Oregon officials and Portland residents alike said that description was ludicrous. U.S. District Judge Karen Imigut, who was appointed by Trump during his first term, issued the order pending further arguments in a lawsuit brought by the state and city. She said the relatively small protests in the city has seen did not justify the use of federalized forces, and allowing the deployment could harm Oregon state sovereignty. Portland Mayor Keith Wilson said Sunday that the city continues to seek legal means to halt any National Guard deployment. This action circumvents the court's decision and threatens to inflame a community that has remained peaceful, Wilson said. Our legal team is coordinating with our partners and will immediately pursue all lawful steps to enforce the judge's order and protect Portlanders' rights. The U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement Building in Portland has recently been the site of nightly protests. Trump has characterized both Portland and Chicago as cities rife with crime and unrest, calling the former a war zone and suggesting apocalyptic force was needed to quell problems in the latter. Since the start of his second term, he has sent or talked about sending troops to 10 cities. Trump authorized the deployment of 300 Illinois National Guard troops to protect federal officers and assets in Chicago on Saturday. Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker's office said the situation in Chicago does not require the use of military, and as a result, the governor opposes the deployment of the National Guard under any status. Pritzker didn't receive any calls from federal officials about the deployment, his office said. The next front page article is titled, "Brnovich Ambassador Pick Withdrawn by White House." This article was written by Howard Fisher of Capital Media Services. Dateline Phoenix, former State Attorney General Mark Brnovich is not going to be the next ambassador to Serbia. The White House late last week sent a message to the Senate that it was withdrawing Brnovich's nomination. No reason was given for the announcement, and there is no immediate response from the White House. Brnovich himself did not return repeated messages seeking comment. But in a statement reported in the Serbian Times, he said it became clear that his nomination on April 29th was not going anywhere. As the process dragged on, it became clear that the bureaucracy of the deep state does not want to serve anyone with my political, ethnic, and religious background in Serbia, he said. Yet Brnovich said both of his parents came from Serbia. Brnovich, in thanking the president, said that he will take advantage of his status. I believe that staying close to family and friends in Arizona and finding an opportunity to play a greater role in the domestic political plan is the best way at this moment, he told Serbian Times. Trump's nomination came after Brnovich, who had been the state's attorney general for 8 years, made an unsuccessful bid for the U.S. Senate in 2022, but he lost the GOP primary to Blake Masters, who in turn was defeated in the general election by Democrat Mark Kelly. He had a rocky relationship with the president and his supporters after the 2020 race, the one that Trump lost both nationally and in Arizona, who claimed that he was unwilling or unable to properly investigate their claims the election was rigged. In fact, Trump endorsed Masters in the primary. In his first report in 2022, Brnovich recommended some changes in election law. That, however, produced no indictments, nor evidence or fraud beyond a handful of people who had voted someone else's ballot. Later that year, he debunked findings in an audit of the 2020 race by ordered Senate President Karen Fann, who had hired a firm known as Cyber Ninjas to review the returns. They alleged that ballots were cast by people who had died. Our agents investigated all individuals that Cyber Ninjas reported as dead, Brnovich said at the time. Many were very surprised to learn they were allegedly deceased. However, whatever were Trump's feelings in 2022, things apparently changed after he returned to the White House in 2024. In a post on Truth Social, the president wrote that Brnovich will be a strong advocate of freedom and always puts America first. The State Department, in its most recent report on Serbia, said the country's occupied a key strategic juncture at the social, political, and geographic crossroads of Eastern and Western Europe. But the New York Times reported earlier this year that the relationship was much more complex, including that Jared Kushner, Trump's son-in-law, has a deal with the Serbian government to build a $500 million hotel and apartment complex in the center of Belgrade, the nation's capital. That project, the Times reports, involves the Trump Organization, which is run by Eric and Donald Jr., and the hotel will bear the Trump name. The paper reports that the project has come under scrutiny from investigators after Serbian government cleared the way by declaring that site a bombed-out building that serves as an icon to Serbians who suffered during the 1999 conflict was no longer a culturally protected asset. The next article is titled, State Newborn Screening Will Add Tests and Support. This article was written by Stephanie Innes of the Arizona Republic. Newborn health screening is in flux at the federal level, but in Arizona, the state's program is expanding. Every year, between 160 and 180 newborns in Arizona have a positive blood test for one of the more than 30 rare disorders included in the state health department's screening program. The odds of a positive result for any of the disorders are low, considering roughly 78,000 babies are born in Arizona each year. But for the families affected, the results can be devastating, which is why the Arizona Department of Health Services is in the midst of developing a long-term statewide follow-up program for babies and families to make sure that they don't fall through the cracks, said Fran Altmaier, who is manager of the new follow-up program. If anything is not what they're expecting, we have a follow-up whole team at the Department of Health to help guide that family, make sure their pediatrician is aware of the test results, connect them to medical specialists to start treatment right away, Altmaier said. So a family needs supported with what happens next to their baby's journey. The number of tests on the newborn's screening panel is expanding too, though at a federal level, the process of adding new disorders has stalled. Arizona, by October 2027, will screen for 39 different disorders, up from 30 nearly a decade ago, and by 2026 is expected to be fully aligned with the federal recommended uniform screening panel for newborns, also known as RUSP. For years, Arizona lagged behind other states on the life-altering conditions included in its newborn screening panel, and until 2017 was one of the last states in the nation without a screening program for severe combined immunodeficiency, or SCID, which was historically sometimes known in the popular culture as bubble boy disease, and which has high mortality rates without early detection. About 4 to 5 newborns per year in Arizona test positive for SCID, Altmaier said. More recently, Arizona has been getting up to speed, in some cases leading other states. For example, Arizona is among a handful of states who have recently approved newborn screening for Duchenne muscular dystrophy, which is a muscle-wasting disease that primarily affects boys. The screening test became law via a bill sponsored by State Senator T.J. Shope, Republican of Coolidge, and signed into law this year by Arizona Governor Katie Hobbs. Duchenne muscular dystrophy is expected to be on the state's panel of newborn screening disorders by 2027, according to state officials who say about 2 years is required to get a new disorder included in the screening panel. Arizona is also in the process of adding a rare hereditary disease called CRAB that causes progressive neurological damage, though the progression of the disease may be slowed with early intervention. CRAB, spelled capital K-R-B-B-E, is expected to be added to the state's newborn screening panel in 2026. Conditions recently added to the panel are a disorder called MPS II, known as Hunter syndrome or mucopolysaccharidosis type 2, and a disorder called GMD or GAMT. Unless their parent or guardian opts out, a few drops of blood are taken from the heel of every newborn in the state within 72 hours, and more typically when the newborn is 24 hours to 36 hours old, to screen for all but two disorders on the panel. Arizona's newborn screening program also screens for hearing loss and critical congenital heart defects, which do not require blood samples. That's not to say we are alarming people unnecessarily, but the way we establish our reference ranges, we have to cast a wide enough net to be able to find the true positive case, Altmaier said. You don't want to miss a case. In other words, parents who are called about abnormal newborn screening results should not panic. Sometimes another test is required to determine whether the blood sample provided is positive. Also, a positive result is not a diagnosis. A clinician is needed for that. Now we'll pause to remind you that you are listening to a broadcast reading of the Arizona Daily Star from Sun Sounds of Arizona. My name is Michael Shannon, and I'm a volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona. If you miss any part of this program, you can access it on demand anytime on our website, www.sunsounds.org, from the broadcast info and audio link. Sun Sounds is also available on your smart home device. Now we'll turn the page to the Tucson and Region section of the Arizona Daily Star for several important and informative articles there. The next article is titled CMO's License Expired. This article was written by Howard Fisher of Capital Media Services Dateline Phoenix. The chief medical officer of the state's health care program is for the needy is practicing without a license. Records from the Arizona Medical Board show that Teresa L. Costales, first licensed in 2018, last renewed her license in 2023. Those records also show that the license was supposed to be renewed by April 9th of this year, and they show that since it was not renewed, it expired on August 9th. But Costales, a psychiatrist who has continued to serve as chief medical officer for the Arizona Healthcare Cost Containment Program System, the state's Medicaid program, which provides care in various forms to more than 1.9 million state residents. In a news release Friday, Republican lawmakers questioned how no one noticed. A lapse like this should never happen in a healthcare agency responsible for millions of people, said Speaker Steve Montenegro in a prepared statement. The public deserves accountability even when the most basic standards aren't met. And Representative Neil Carter, Republican of Santan Valley, the Speaker Pro Tem, said the fact that Costales has been allowed to continue in a job that reportedly pays $325,000 a year shows that Governor Hobbs has failed once again to ensure competence and accountability in state government. The governor's office, however, referred all inquiries to AHCCS, and it issued a prepared statement saying it is aware of Dr. Costales' current medical status. The agency said in a renewal notice was sent to a former employer's address delaying the receipt of the information. The agency said Costales has been in contact with the state medical board and is actively pursuing an expedited renewal and approval. But the records of the medical board show that it has the AHCCS office as her address. Reasons for the delayed aside, House Majority Whip Julie Willoughby said the fact the agency was operating for months with a medical doctor without a license raises serious questions. The Chandler Republican pointed out that all this comes as AHCCS has been implementing changes in programs that determine whether children with developmental disabilities will lose state-provided care. All that comes because the state is implementing new assessment tools to determine how much skilled care can be considered medically necessary. Home and community-based services are now provided for children through the Arizona Long-Term Care System, part of AHCCS. In some cases, the method of evaluation has been changed, focusing on physical abilities versus the child's ability to communicate or control behavior. With the controversial HCBS system tool rolled out, we must ask, were those reviews overseen by a CMO whose license has already expired? Willoughby asked. If so, how can families trust the integrity of the data or the decisions that come from it? She continued. The development disabilities community has already been harmed, and it is outrageous that those decisions may have been shaped by someone without a current medical license. AHCCCS did not provide any answers to those questions, either in its prepared response or to follow-up questions. Less clear is what the effect, if any, of having an unlicensed person in that position. There apparently is no statutory requirement stating the agency chief medical officer must be a licensed physician. By contrast, the GOP lawmaker said the Arizona Department of Corrections, Rehabilitation, and Reentry requires applicants to be its chief medical officer to possess a valid, unrestricted Arizona medical license. The discovery of Constala's lack of a license comes just days after Hobbs named Virginia Roundtree to head AHCCCS. Carmen Heredia, who has been the governor's original pick, resigned earlier this year after it became clear she was going to have trouble getting confirmed by the Republican-controlled Senate. Senator Jake Hoffman, who chairs the Committee on Director Nominations, said Heredia had overseen failures, mismanagement, and fraud at the agency. And the Queen Creek Republican specifically cited the finding by a judge earlier this year that AHCCCS had improperly issued contracts to healthcare companies that provide service to 26,000 older adults and people with disabilities. All this also comes as a new federal budget affects funding for healthcare. House Majority Leader Michael Carbone questioned why no one at AHCCCS caught the fact that its medical director was operating without a license. Any citizen can look this up in minutes, said the Buckeye Republican. With the medical board operating a website where the individuals can insert the name of anyone and determine that if that person is licensed. That it slipped through the cracks at the highest level of medical leadership is completely unacceptable. The next article is titled, Hamadeh Seeks Judge Candidate. This article was written by Howard Fisher of Capital Media Services, Dateline Phoenix. 3 years after he was defeated in his 2022 bid for Arizona Attorney General, and after losing a series of lawsuits trying to claim the office, U.S. Representative Abe Hamadeh is now trying to oust the trial judge who refused to declare him the winner. In a social media post, his campaign account is seeking out brave attorneys who live in Mojave County to run against incumbent Lee Jensen. Judge Jensen, who inexplicably ruled against Abe Hamadeh's election lawsuit without considering the evidence, is up for election again in 2026, the post on X reads. It claims that Jensen helped disenfranchise thousands of voters. Hamadeh and anyone else can make this kind of plea because, unlike in the urban counties, superior court judges in rural counties are directly elected, just like any other politician, and that provides the opportunity for any lawyer a requirement to sit on the bench to campaign for the office. We have to uproot the corruption in Arizona, the post reads. We can start with this judge, it continues, with a photo of Jensen. And any doubt that Hamadeh does not agree with his campaign was dispelled when he reposted the screed himself. Jensen, a Republican like Hamadeh, could not be reached for comment, and Hamadeh, who won his 2024 bid for Congress, did not respond to multiple messages seeking an explanation of his claim that he did not get a fair shake in Jensen's court. The actual records of the case, however, paint quite a different picture. It starts with the fact that it was Hamadeh who chose to challenge his loss to Democrat Chris Mayes in Mojave County Superior Court. All the judges on the court are Republican, meaning whoever was assigned that case could be the same party as Hamadeh. That, however, didn't help when the case landed in Jensen's court. The bottom line is, you just haven't proven your case, the judge told Hamadeh's attorney, Tim Lasota. Jensen said any mistakes that may have been made on how ballots were counted were not enough to overcome the presumption the court has to have in election cases that the election was done correctly. There isn't enough information, I don't think even slight information, the election was done illegally or incorrectly, Jensen said in a ruling from the bench after the half-day trial in December 2022. The judge acknowledged that out of 2,300 ballots reviewed, there were 14 ballots presented where there could be some question of whether a vote should have been counted, whether for Hamadeh or Mays. Those ballots were the marks made by voters were less than clear. But Jensen said that wasn't enough for him to rule that county officials who checked these ballots by hand did something wrong. Lasota argued that the results might have been different had the judge allowed him to examine more ballots from Maricopa, Pima, and Navajo counties. But Yansen said that request went beyond the scope of what's allowed in election contests, contests that have to be resolved quickly. It was after that ruling that Hamade first raised the claim that there were thousands of uncounted provisional ballots. These are ballots that were accepted but set aside for a variety of reasons, including a voter's failure to produce required identification at a polling place, the lack of the person's name on voter registration rolls, or an indication the person has already voted. The last situation became an issue in the 2022 race after some Maricopa County voters finding long lines at some locations due to printer and tabulation issues chose to leave to go to a nearby site, but unless they formally checked out of the first polling place, the voters listed them as having voted. Or rather, the records listed them as having voted. Lasota acknowledged, however, that county officials said they did go back through the provisional ballots in the last category and count them after determining that there was no other votes cast by that person that day. Hamade went back to court claiming to have newly discovered evidence, but Yansen refused to give him a new trial to present that. That was affirmed by the state's Court of Appeals, appellate judge David Gass, writing for the majority in the 2-1 decision, said that Hamade never really explained how any of this would have affected the final outcome, which showed he lost to Mays by 280 votes. The appellate court also said that Yansen did not err in rejecting various requests by Hamade for information from Maricopa County, including a list of people who cast provisional ballots, but those votes were not counted. Here too, Gass said Hamade failed either to act promptly or to show that any of this was relevant. And the court rebuffed claims that Yansen acted improperly in limiting the amount of time he had to prepare his legal arguments for his trial. Hamade clearly was displeased with the ruling, calling it a display of a neutered justice system that not only defies common sense, but defies the rule of law. The ruling illustrates that one of the most disgraceful elections in the history of our state will never face accountability or honor the true will of the people, he said in a prepared statement. None of that ended Hamade's effort to be declared the winner. He pursued a separate claim that his constitutional rights were violated in the 2022 race. Hamade pointed out problems with printers at Maricopa County voting centers that resulted in long lines the Republicans contender said resulted in some voters simply walking away. More to the point, Hamade and his legal allies at AZ Voters Rights said these dissuaded voters were more likely to have been Republicans, and that, he said, could have changed the results of the race he officially lost to Mays by 280 votes. All that, Hamade charged, violated his rights of equal protection and due process. And that, said attorney Ryan Heath, provides legal grounds to set aside the certified results and order Maricopa County to redo the election. But Maricopa County Superior Court Judge Scott Blaney said that is legally irrelevant. The case is actually an ultimately election contest, this judge said, no matter how it's dressed up as a violation of constitutional rights. Any action contesting a state election must be filed within 5 days after completion of the canvass of the election and declaration of the results thereof by the Secretary of State or Governor, said Blaney. That would have been the first week of December 2022. The case was filed in November 2023. Hamade fared no better in yet another lawsuit where he challenged the ruling that Mays was holding office illegally. He argued that only those ballots where the signatures matched the original voter registration record should have been counted. By contrast, the county validated ballots where signatures matched other records, including ballot affidavits from other elections. But Maricopa County Superior Court Judge Susan Pineda pointed out the county had announced months before the election how it was going to verify ballot signatures. The judge said if Hamade had a problem with the procedure, he should have brought it then. By filing his action after completion of the election, petitioner asked the court to overturn the will of the people as expressed in the 2022 election, Pena wrote, "The judge also took issue with Hamadeh for using a process known as quo warranto, an action seeking a declaration that someone is holding office illegally. That is a legitimate procedure, but the judge noted that, generally speaking, it can be brought only by a person aiming to be the rightful office holder, something," she said, "requires proof that person is entitled to the office." But in this case, Pineda said, what Hamadeh was seeking was re-verification of the 2022 Maricopa County mail-in ballots after purging those allegedly improper signature comparison, or in the alternative new election. The judge wasn't buying it. He surmises without proof that he received the most legal votes for the office of Attorney General. Pineda said that is insufficient to obtain the relief sought. The next article is titled, "Mays Sues Zillow and Redfin Over $100 Million Deal." This article was written by Catherine Rigor of the Arizona Republic. Arizona Attorney General Chris Mays filed a lawsuit against popular real estate listing websites Zillow and Redfin, alleged a recent $100 million deal between the two entities will cost renters more money by thwarting competition. The lawsuit filed by Arizona and several other states on October 1st alleges the deal between the two real estate giants gives Zillow an unfair advantage to charge landlords more money to advertise and will lead to apartment managers charging higher rents. The move by the state attorneys general follow a similar action by the Federal Trade Commission, which filed an antitrust suit against Zillow and Redfin on September 30th. Zillow allegedly paid its competitor Redfin $100 million in February 2025 to end its online listing business, according to the FTC lawsuit. Arizonans are already facing an astronomical cost of living, and now these massive companies want to create an unfair advantage in the market, which will allow them to skyrocket costs for landlords, Mays said in a prepared statement. Zillow and Redfin are two of the biggest rental listing websites in the U.S., and both have acquired several competitors during the last several years. Searching listings are free for renters, but large landlords pay fees to list and advertise rentals. Metro Phoenix rents are up about 30% since 2020, outpacing income increases. The lawsuits don't include estimates of how much Zillow-Redfin deal could increase rents, and Mays' office said that information isn't available. The lawsuit also alleged Redfin agreed its website would be an exclusive syndicator of Zillow listings, a move that means it would copy Zillow's information. The FTC also accused Redfin of consenting to end contracts with landlord advertisers. Both real estate websites have defended their deal. Redfin released a statement saying the company strongly disagrees with the allegations and is confident that courts will vindicate the company. "Our partnership with Zillow has given Redfin visitors access to more rental listings and our advertising customers access to more renters," the statement read. A release statement from Zillow said, "Our listing syndication with Redfin benefits both renters and property managers and has expanded renters' access to multifamily listings across multiple platforms." Zillow also called the deal pro-competitive and pro-consumer. Daniel Guarnera, director of the FTC's Bureau of Competition, said in a release statement that paying off a competitor to stop competing against you is a violation of federal antitrust laws. Zillow paid millions of dollars to eliminate Redfin as an independent competitor in an already concentrated advertising market. The lawsuit asked the court to stop the websites from continuing their anti-competitive practices and divest any assets that are part of them. The next article from the Tucson and Region section of the Arizona Daily Star is titled, "Charter School Founders Can Use Secret Transcript." This article was written by Howard Fisher of Capital Media Services, Dateline Phoenix. The founders of an Arizona charter school may be able to use secret grand jury transcripts to sue the state attorney general's office, the Court of Appeals has said. In a new ruling, the three-judge panel acknowledged that such documents normally are kept from the public to protect everyone, from witnesses to those named in the indictment. The appellate judge David So I writing the unanimous decision said that is not absolute. And in this case, he said there is sufficient reason to allow Amanda Jellison and April Black to use it in their federal court case claiming the AG's office and two investigators violated their civil rights and how they got the indictments in the first place, an indictment that was subsequently dismissed. The decision does not mean everyone will get to look at the evidence presented to charge Jellison, Black, and Encino schools with fraud, theft, forgery, and conspiracy. Instead, Winswijk said the transcript should be delivered under seal to the federal court handling their case against the prosecutors. And it will be the federal judge who determines whether they have a particularized need for the transcripts that outweighs the state law, which actually makes it a crime to knowingly disclose the nature or substance of any grand jury testimony. At the heart of the case is an indictment brought in 2021 against the school and the founders accusing them of fraud in connection with grant funding. Then Attorney General Mark Brunovich issued a news release naming the pair and their school, saying the total loss exceeds $567,000. Attorneys for the defendants said they had given prosecutors an audit that showed there had been no wrongdoing. Prosecutors disclosed that report to the grand jury, but an expert for the state in his own testimony discredited it. The indictment was thrown out when Maricopa County Superior Court Judge Ronnie Coburn Steiner called the statements made by the state's expert wildly misleading, outright wrong, and troubling, calling the mischaracterizations egregious. The state never sought a new indictment, and the charges went away. Now, the two women and the school won a federal court to rule that they were subject to malicious prosecution, defamation, and the victims of intentional infliction of emotional distress. To do that, however, they said they need to show the federal court what prosecutors said and hid inside the grand jury room. A state trial judge rejected their request for access to the grand jury records. In the new ruling, Winswijk said that was wrong. Secrecy is vital to grand jury proceedings, he wrote. Grand jury proceedings must be kept secret to prevent negative publicity for those accused and ultimately exonerated, to diminish the risk of flight, and to safeguard members of the grand jury from influence or retribution. But given the facts of this case, Winswijk wrote, society had a diminished interest in grand jury secrecy. For one, he said, it is the defendants in the criminal case, the ones who were indicted, who want to use transcript for their lawsuit. So we are less concerned about negative publicity for those accused and ultimately exonerated, Winswijk said. He also said secrecy is not essential since the indictment already had been made public, meaning there was no way for the defendants to influence the proceedings. Third, said Winswijk, the defendants already had the transcripts, which had to be made available to them to defend their case. So he said there was no risk of them using the information in retribution against those who testified. Winswijk also said there is a fact that the indictments already had been dismissed and the Attorney General's office had decided not to refile the charges. Finally, he said that the trial judge could have let them use the transcript in the federal case, but imposed protective orders on how the information can be used. That, however, still leaves the question of whether the defendants in the criminal case have had a particularized need for the transcripts. Winswijk said that allows a judge to determine that absent the transcripts, the defendant will, in some manner, be prejudiced or his legal rights adversely affected. And that, he said, is why the material is being turned over to the federal judge under seal, who will assess and balance the particularized need against society's diminished interest in secrecy. A spokesman for Chris Mays, who became Attorney General after the original criminal case was dropped, declined to comment on the ruling or whether her office would appeal to the Arizona Supreme Court. There is another party, however, to the case. Brundage not only was Attorney General when all this was going on, but actually put out a news release about the indictment. He was sued in both his role as Attorney General and individually. Brundage did not immediately return messages seeking comment. Now it's time to flip the pages to the Nation and the World section of the Arizona Daily Star to check out several important news articles there. The first article is titled Egypt Will Host Talks. This article was written by Sammy Magdi and Melanie Lidman of the Associated Press, Dateline Cairo. Israel and Hamas prepared for indirect negotiations Monday in Egypt as hopes for a possible ceasefire in Gaza grew after Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said a hostage release could be announced this week. Tuesday marks 2 years since Hamas attack that sparked the war. President Donald Trump welcomed the Hamas statement accepting some elements of the U.S. peace plan. Israel said it supported the new U.S. effort. Under the plan, Hamas would release the remaining 48 hostages, 20 believed to be alive. Within 3 days, it would give up power and disarm. The delegation led by top Israeli negotiator Ron Dermer will leave Monday for the talks in Sharm el-Sheikh, Netanyahu's office said. An Egyptian official said the Hamas delegation had arrived. The official, speaking on condition of anonymity, said because he wasn't authorized to brief reporters, said U.S. Envoy Steve Witkoff is joining the talks. Discussions will focus on the proposed exchange of hostages for Palestinian prisoners held by Israel, Egypt's foreign ministry said. U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio called the situation as close as we've come to getting all of the hostages released. Speaking on ABC's This Week, he described two phases after Hamas accepts Trump's framework. The hostages are released and Israel pulls back in Gaza to the yellow line where it was in August. Rubio told CBS that Hamas should release hostages as they are ready, and that bombardment needs to end so they can be released. The U.S. plan also addresses Gaza's future. In a text exchange with CNN's Jake Tapper, Trump said there would be complete obliteration if Hamas stayed in power there. Trump also texted that not Netanyahu was on board for ending the bombing and peace in Gaza, but added soon on the rest. Israeli government spokeswoman Shash Bedrosian told journalists that Netanyahu is in regular contact with Trump and that the prime minister has stressed that the talks in Egypt will be confined to a few days maximum. I hope that we are closest to a hostage deal since the ceasefire deal in January, Israeli Foreign Minister Gideon Sar said in a speech. Anxious relatives of hostages gathered near Netanyahu's residence in Jerusalem, with some urging Trump continue to apply pressure. Israel's recent military offensive in Gaza City led many to fear for the hostages' lives. We cannot allow such historic agreement to be sacrificed again, said Michael Newitz, father of Guy Newitz. Rubio told ABC that decisions regarding a governing structure or intentional group to manage Gaza can take place simultaneously with the ceasefire first step. That's the part that I think is going to be a little tougher to work through, but that's what's going to provide permanency to the end of the conflict. The next article is titled Massive Protests Held Across EU. This article was written by Andrew Wilkes of the Associated Press, Dateline Istanbul. Hundreds of thousands of people across several European cities marched Sunday in support of Palestinians and an aid flotilla's attempt to reach Gaza. Istanbul held the largest of multiple demonstrations being staged in Turkey. Footage showed crowds walking from the iconic Hagia Sophia to the banks of the Golden Horn, where they were greeted by dozens of boats decked in Turkish and Palestinian flags. The marchers called for Muslim solidarity with Palestinians following midday prayers in front of the former Byzantine cathedral, now converted to a mosque. Protests were among others planned Sunday in European cities to mark the second anniversary of Hamas October 7, 2023 attack on Israel that triggered the war in Gaza. Israel's attacks have killed more than 67,000 Palestinians, according to the Gaza Health Ministry that is part of the Hamas-run government. In the Turkish capital Ankara, protesters held up flags and placards condemning the genocide in Gaza. This oppression, which began in 1948, has been continuing for 2 years, turning into genocide. Recep Karabal of the Palestinian Support Platform told crowds in the northern city of Kiryat Kalkel. Support for Palestinians is widespread in Muslim-majority Turkey, and President Recep Tayyip Erdogan is a leading critic of Israel's military operations in Gaza. In the Netherlands, an estimated 250,000 people, most dressed in red, gathered in Amsterdam to press the government to take tougher action against Israel. Sunday's protest and march through the Dutch capital comes less than 4 weeks before the national elections. Two redline demonstrations in The Hague earlier this year also drew tens of thousands of people. After packing the central Muslim square, the protesters walked through the city center holding Palestinian flags and peace emblems. The placard read, "Ashamed of the government." The Dutch government has long been a staunch supporter of Israel, but in recent months have been more critical as international support for Israel has ebbed. On Friday, Foreign Minister David Van Wiel said it was unlikely he would grant an export license to send parts for F-35 fighter jets to Israel. "The bloodshed must stop, and we unfortunately have to stand there because we have such an incredibly weak government that doesn't care to draw a red line. That's why we are here, in the hope that it helps," protester Marik Van Ziel said. Marjan Razima, a spokesperson for Amnesty International, one of the protest organizers, called for the use of all economic and diplomatic means to increase pressure on Israel. In Britain, meanwhile, hundreds of people rallied to mark Hamas' 2023 attack and mourn the victims of an attack on a synagogue in Manchester. A crowd gathered outside Manchester Cathedral, holding Israeli and UK flags and signs calling for the release of hostages held by Hamas. A banner paid tribute to two men who died in the synagogue attack on Yom Kippur. It said their bravery will never be forgotten. Due to time constraints, we have reached the end of today's reading of the Arizona Daily Star, the October 6, 2025 edition. For Sun Sounds of Arizona, this is Michael Shannon, your volunteer reader. Thank you very much for listening.